Mr. Right. That's right with a W. It's a play on words, and playing with words is my profession. I'm the prolific novelist Richard Bunn, and on the Mr. Right program, I sit down with another writer to talk writing and writers and writing and the craft of writing. Thanks so much for listening, and please enjoy. But you live it, Mr. Right. Welcome once again to the Mr. Right program. That's right, with a W, it's a play on words. I'm Richard Bunn, but you knew that, of course, loyal listeners. Thank you so much for joining us once again. I'm very happy to be here in the studio, joined with a very special guest. He's a writer of many children's novels about sports, as well as a former and currently disgraced columnist for Sports Illustrated for Kids, and an all-around great guy and a great writer. Please welcome Richard Benjamin. Richard, thank you for being here.
Richard, thank you for having me.
Oh, this is such a treat to have to be looking across the table at another Richard for once.
I don't know if you're like me, but when I'm at home by myself,
yes,
I address myself in the third person, but
sure,
in the first person as if I'm speaking to another person. So it's nice to have to not to learn another name
to
just say Richard.
Yeah, and we don't need to sort out the Richards later, as I say. Have you always gone by Richard? Did you ever go with a nickname, anything? Rich, Richie, Rick, Ricky, Dick, Dickie?
Certainly had my phases where I went by Rich, where I went by Richie, where I went by Rick, where I went by Ricky, where I went by Dick, where I went by Dickie. All six of them. And then not to mention what other people called me as well.
I did briefly go by, this would have been in my second stint at junior college, I went by Rick for a little while, and you know, much younger days, and I had some pretty good muscles going, and I drove a convertible Toyota Celica, and I have to admit, I did pretty well at the discotheques with the ladies, but those were different times. Well, we're a couple of dicks here in a confined space, and we're coming right into your ears, listeners, so grab a seatbelt and get ready for a great conversation about writing. Now, let me jump into some of your current work. You've been writing a number of novels recently, children's novels for the most part.
Yes, yes.
And usually in the vein of the sports novel.
Yes, yes. Well, I grew up playing a lot of sports. I was very active as a child. So I found that my intro to fiction was greatly galvanized by anything sports related. And it was very easy for me to fantasize, daydream, imagine sports scenarios playing out in my head when I was younger.
Yes, yes.
So when I sit down and put pen to paper or put fingers to keyboard, the thing that flows most naturally are probably depictions of sports scenes.
Yes.
Ipso facto.
This was one that jumped out at me, and I haven't read this, and I do need to read this, and I wouldn't mind it if you gave me a copy. You could mail it to me by U.S. Postal Service. However, you'd like to get it to me. But this title jumped out at me. Golf is for Friends. Now, I don't know if they give out an award for the world's gentlest title, but I would have to imagine that would be right up there in the running. Golf is for Friends. Very, very soft and gentle.
I've got to say, a lot of these titles have to be worked and reworked with an editor, with the production house. But Golf is for Friends is probably one of the only titles that I had that immediately – I didn't even have a story attached.
No.
I threw it out as what we know in the biz as a bluff pitch during a meeting.
Oh, yes.
And
fill in our listeners. What's a bluff pitch?
So a bluff pitch. Let's say I went in with a real pitch. So
I'll pretend I'm the publisher. How's that?
Why don't perfect.
We play out the scenario.
Perfect. Can your name be Richard as well?
Yes, but I'll use a different Richard because I'm not Richard Bunn in this case. I'm Richard Buns, the publisher. I'm Richard Buns.
Okay. All right. Richard.
Yes, Richard.
I'm loving this office. It's beautiful.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
You've got tasteful frames on the walls.
Yes, we do everything here with taste at Buns Publishing. Now, why don't you shoot one of your pitches at me? I'd love to hear what you're thinking about for your next novel.
Sure. Well, one that I've written extensively, I've already gotten a third draft, and I'm halfway through a fourth one, is The Home Run Caper. That's about a boy who hits a home run, and it falls upon a dead body right outside the baseball stadium.
Oh, whoa, whoa, whoa.
Oh, you don't like that one?
Well, we've got dead bodies in the In the synopsis of the home run caper, that seems a little macabre.
You know, some of my best grade school pals and I...
Died?
Yes, yes.
Oh, my.
Well, I'm in my 50s.
I see, I
anyway,
see.
But what I was going to bring up is an annual tournament that we used to do. It was a pro-am that we used to do down one of the courses near the lake. As you know, golf is for friends. And we would...
Wait a minute.
What's that?
What did you just say?
Well, I said, as you know, golf is for friends.
Golf is for friends?
Yes.
Now, that's a title.
Yes. Yes, that's what I was saying. Yeah, that's what I was saying.
and scene, as they say in the theater.
You picked up on that remarkably well.
So you just inserted that title as if it wasn't a title of a book, and that publisher jumped right on it, and he liked it. You fooled him. You pulled the switcheroo, didn't you?
I'd like to say that I did, but, you know, sometimes nuggets of gold cannot be seen by your eyes. They can only be seen by other people's eyes because the nuggets of gold are embedded in your body, and it takes
nuggets
them.
Of gold. Now, that's a title as well. Did you just bluff pitch me, Richard Bunn?
I did. Nuggets for gold. Now, that's about the Denver Nuggets, who are forced...
Nuggets of gold.
They're forced to take over the mantle of the USA men's basketball team when they're all killed in a car accident. So they... I know it's a little macabre as well.
Yes.
But they take over, and they have to fly to China for the Olympics. And the Denver Nuggets, and unfortunately they get the bronze. But it's still a very good story.
Well, that's wonderful, and I love how well you sneak those titles in when nobody's expecting them. There was one of your titles that I was curious about, and I wondered if you got any pushback on this one when you pitched this to your publisher. You had a book out called A Boy and His Balls. And what was that like when you told them you wanted to write a book with that title?
Well, I knew I would get pushback on that one. My editor had told me as much. He said, this one is laced with innuendo. I'm not much for innuendo. I like to hit the nail on the head.
I see.
I don't like to beat around the bush.
Right, right.
That's innuendo, and I didn't care for it out of my own mouth.
Oh, yes. It was innuendo.
Yes, it was.
Bush, the reference to Bush. Yes,
yes Bush. Yes, Bush. You know, euphemism for...
A pubic bush.
Yeah, pubic bush.
Yes.
Yes. Male or female, the bush.
The pubic bush of a male or a female.
Yes, the untamed, unshaven bush.
Right.
I knew that I would get pushback on A Boy and His Balls.
Yes.
So I did what I thought was wise, which was come in with the artwork... Already in hand.
I see.
A boy and several different sports paraphernalia surrounding him.
I see.
Right?
I see.
To really paint the picture that this is a story about a stud multi-sport athlete, right, who's the talk of his high school.
Yes.
All right? And this isn't about a boy and his, you know, his scrotum.
Right.
His testicles.
Right. Though there
his
is
bush.
There is some there are some parts in there where he does demonstrate the standard testicular self-examination that all men, boys going through puberty, are taught by their medical professionals to learn how to do, inspect their testicles.
Yes. Yeah, well, his father's very distant.
And,
his father's very distant
right.
in the book. He works two jobs to help feed the family. And Derek, the protagonist, the boy with his balls, he strikes up a very fortuitous relationship with his family pediatrician, you know, who he'll soon stop seeing because he's almost 18.
Right.
And the family pediatrician, you know, along with counseling him about all of the great sports activities that he's participating in at school, also tells him, you don't want your career to be sidetracked by testicular cancer.
Right, right.
So
we find sort of a father figure in his pediatrician.
Mm-hmm. Which... obviously led to Two Men and Their Balls, the sequel.
That was the sequel to
which
that.
Was not very well received and certainly wasn't children's literature.
Yeah, well, I think it's great that you're able to branch out into all the different genres and subgenres. You're not exclusively a children's author. You write books for people of all ages, and I think that's wonderful.
That's true. Now, I'm mostly known for my children's literature, which I'm very proud of. But as you know, I've had dalliances with other subgenres.
Yes. Yeah, well, haven't we all? Yes. An issue I wanted to delve in
to hear with you, and I want to get a gauge on whether or not you're comfortable talking with this.
Mm, here we go.
That was – you may know what I'm what
yes.
I'm going for right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, here we go.
Your very public firing from Sports Illustrated for Kids. You were a longtime columnist there.
Mm, here we go.
And you were unceremoniously and in the bright light of day – very publicly fired from that job.
Yes, yes. I was one of the senior columnists there. They had offered me the lead chief editor position many times, and I turned it down because I loved the columns too much.
Mm.
And I didn't want to take myself away from the pride that I took in
sure.
educating young children about sports, especially through illustrations, which Sports Illustrated for Kids did so well.
And Illustrated,
still does. It
Illustrated
still does.
Right in the title.
Yeah, they still – They still I don't hold it against them. I think that we entered into an era, if you will, an epoch of literature where things spoken between friends are very acceptable, and yet written down on the page, kept for posterity without an editor, can be very dangerous.
Yes,
what I'm
yes.
referring to, of course, is the tweet that I sent out in
That's
early
right.
2010 when I was new to Twitter and have since abandoned that specifically got me fired,
mm-hmm.
which was a joke that I think between friends would have elicited much laughter and
yes.
still does.
Absolutely. And this was the early days of Twitter, wasn't it? So
yes.
we didn't really know how these things might get out and go viral, as
mm-hmm.
they say. I was doing air quotes when I said that.
Mm-hmm.
And the information can get out there, and then everybody is immediately a judge and a jury and an executioner in your case.
Yes.
And you sort of fell victim to that with your tweet, which was remind us again what the tweet was.
Well— Most days I try to forget this, but the tweet was verbatim, and I knew that because I printed out a small copy, cut it out, laminated it, and I keep it in my wallet, and it's roughly the size of a CVS card.
Right.
Or Rite Aid, whichever your local pharmacy.
Either one. You're going to have a card for either one.
Yes. It's keychain-sized. it was, wouldn't it be funny if Sports Illustrated for Kids had a swimsuit issue of its own?
Yes, yes. That was the one.
That was the one. And I thought that I was pretty much protected by the
right.
beginning of that tweet, which was, wouldn't it be funny?
Right.
Not, wouldn't it be sexy? Wouldn't it make me masturbate?
No.
Wouldn't it be
you said funny?
Funny. I said
and
funny.
I remember
funny.
When I came across it, I did. I laughed, and I thought it was funny.
Yes.
And I gave it a favorite.
I appreciate
it. I favorited it. With one of those stars, which now have been abandoned in favor of hearts, which form your own opinion on that. But
mm-hmm.
I found it very funny, and I found it very distressing to see one of my colleagues dragged through the muck as you were right after that. Because,
mm-hmm.
again, you didn't say there's anything sexy about these children that would be wearing bikinis or skimpy little Speedos for the boys.
Or I sensible imagine. One pieces.
Sensible one pieces.
Is, you know, children of all sizes as well.
Long board shorts, sure, absolutely.
Children wear swimsuits. That was my point, and I thought, you know, the juxtaposition was funny. I thought it was funny. And you know what? It's hard because between you and I've tried to distance myself from this many, many times, but between you and I still think it's funny.
Yes.
I still think it's very
yes.
funny.
Yes, it is.
Wouldn't it be funny if there was a Sports Illustrated for Kids swimsuit edition? I think that would be very funny. I think we would all get a kick out of that. It would be tastefully done, and there would be funny captions.
It's
you know?
Objectively funny. It's
yes.
it's unfortunately
yes.
sullied by what happened next. But I stand by it.
The FBI confiscated my desktop computer, my laptop computer.
Like you're a gosh dang Jared from Subway,
mm-hmm.
and it's not fair at all. Because, and I say this, you can open up the JCPenney's catalog any year you want, and you're going to be able to find children in swimsuits, in their underpants. There's nothing that you can't find in one of those catalogs that you would have had in the Sports Illustrated for Kids swimsuit issue.
That's a great point. Now, what if a Delia's catalog accidentally ends up in my mailbox, and I open it, and I have a hysterical laugh looking at all the children in their swimsuits? Right. Now, I think that's appropriate. I think that's fine. You know why it's funny? What am I doing with Adelia's catalog?
What are you doing with Adelia's catalog?
Well, somehow my name ended up on a subscription, which I'm blaming on one of my friends.
Yes.
You know? And not to mention a lot of my friends and some of my enemies have since been sending me a child pornography to my very public email address.
Oh, well, that's no good.
FBI discovered, which was grounds for termination based in Sports Illustrated for Kids' Eyes. You know, do I harbor ill feelings toward them? No.
Yes.
Yes.
No?
Well, yes, I do. Yes.
Yes. I assumed yes.
Yes. There was a 3.5-year period where I was publicly livid, and I lived out my shame, my frustration, and my vengeance in the public eye.
Mm-hmm.
But now I've since atoned for all of that, and I wish them well, and I still think it's a very worthwhile and a very important publication. I think it's a very important publication. I stand behind it. I wish I could still write for it. But, you know, this is the era that we lived in.
Yeah.
You know, in Copernicus's time, you could say, you know, I believe that the world is round. I think that star up there is a hot, bright, burning ball of gas. Mm-hmm. And you'd be put to death.
That's right.
So at least I wasn't put to death for saying, wouldn't it be funny if Sports Illustrated for Kids also had a swimsuit issue? Right? I haven't been put
to
death.
Thank goodness you're sitting right across from me here at this desk. Living and breathing. And I think it's very big of you to take the high road because you could be trashing them publicly if you wanted. And I wouldn't blame you one gosh dang bit. And you can take that to the bank, one Richard to another.
Thank you. Well, I'll have to put my last name on it if I want to cash it, unless you're giving me straight cash, which I won't take to the bank.
I won't.
I'll put it in my pocket. I'll take it to my personal bank.
You'll take it to your personal bank and make
it. And then it'll see its way back to your personal bank.
Yes, and then I'll get the canceled check at that point, obviously.
Yes,
and that's how banking works.
Unless it's cash, in which case you buy me a coffee, I buy you a coffee.
Right. You would have the receipt. You'd have the only copy of the receipt for the deposit.
Yes. Oh. What rapport. I love it. I love this rapport. Every time we get together, I love the rapport.
This is fun. All right. It's now time for one of our recurring segments here on the Mr. Right program, right with a W, play on words. And that is the write-in, where one of our listeners has written in a tiny story. And I'm going to read it right now here on the program. And we have a wonderful submission from a writer by the name of Nick Ehart. That's not Nicky Hart, which is perhaps a more marketable name. But Nick Ehart writes a lovely story here. It's titled Sweeter Than Wine. And I will read it right now here on the program. Frazzle doesn't begin to describe it, I screamed in reply to Jennifer as she set up and poured another blind testing. I had guessed the right region, but the wrong Nebbiolo. My palate was fucked this morning, and my wife was going to be furious that I repurposed Jennifer, my son's home health aide, as my assistant during the week leading up to the Master Sommelier exam. Whatever. At least Jackson's deaf ears don't hear us arguing, I thought, throwing back a 2007 Croatian Malbec and admiring Jennifer's clear braces. Wow, that's it.
That was as rich as the Malbec that character was tasting.
Yes, that 2007 Croatian. Sweeter than wine, indeed. That was a real cliffhanger.
Yes.
In a way. But I suppose it's not because that is the end of it, and we will never learn any more about the frazzled husband and Jennifer. He really opened up our imaginations there at the end as he says, admires Jennifer's clear braces. Very evocative.
That was what I like to call cut from cloth because of the texture.
Mm.
You can feel it.
Yes, like a fine suede or a corduroy. Or I don't know what particular cloth you were thinking, texture-wise. Smooth or rough and rugged?
Imperfect, bumpy.
Imperfect and bumpy,
yes,
yeah.
Maybe a very thin tweed.
Mm-hmm.
A thin tweed.
He really paints a picture there with – it seems very chaotic. He's got he's dealing with his son's home health aide. His son evidently is deaf as well.
I missed that one.
Yes. Let me get back to the passage. His son's name is Jack. At least Jackson's deaf ears don't hear us arguing, he says. He has a deaf son. He's got Jennifer. He's got the wife who's not happy with the situation because he's repurposed Jennifer. Repurposing Jennifer. Now, that's a title, isn't it?
That's a bluff pitch if I've ever heard
that. That is a bluff pitch.
Repurposing Jennifer. You could get fired for that if you put it on Twitter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, just calm down. Calm.
Repurposing Jennifer.
All right, it's okay, Richard. But he leaves us with that image of Jennifer's clear braces. He's staring at the clear braced teeth of a younger girl, a home health aide, someone perhaps he can imagine moving on his life with.
Mm-hmm. Anywhere from 21 to 44.
I suppose,
depending
yeah.
on his age.
Depending on his age.
I think you can be repurposed between those ages.
Those are typically the repurposing years,
mm-hmm.
yes.
You can still run a mile up to age 44.
And after that?
I wouldn't try.
You wouldn't recommend it.
I wouldn't recommend it. I wouldn't.
No, absolutely not. Well, a wonderful story from Nikki Hart. Thank you so much. Sweeter Than Wine or Repurposing Jennifer. Take your pick. Take that title if you like it. Great. Now, speaking of titles, mm-hmm. and fiction, we're going to get a little taste of some of the stuff that you wrote in your earlier days. Now, some might be surprised and others not surprised to find out that you started out in your younger days writing erotic fiction under a pseudonym. Isn't that right?
Yes, that's absolutely right. It's something that I don't really make public these days because
right.
of the current genre that I work in.
Right, and all of the troubles that befell you. But yeah. it is nonetheless part of your history, and you did some great work in those years.
Thank you, yes. I was prodigious. I was prolific, to use one of your favorite
yes,
words.
Yes, yes.
I went for quantity and quality.
Okay.
Which
if you can manage both, that's great. But if you can only pick one, then pick one.
Yes, preferably quantity.
Agreed.
If I'm reading you correctly.
Agreed.
Yes.
Agreed, yes.
Yes. Should I talk about this?
Yes. And I had you bring in a passage from one of your old stories. And you – what was your name, your pen name?
I went by Throbert Frost.
Throbert Frost. That's a great name.
Yes. Throbber, of course, being an enlarged, engorged
yes.
Male penis.
Right, male penis.
At the height of its stiffness.
Engorgement.
It is literally throbbing.
Right. Throb is a great prefix there to any name. So Throbert is kind of a perfect choice. But so this is one of your stories, and I'll let you take it away.
All right. And I'll just give a little setup,
sure.
a little bit of backstory.
Great.
Because this is the last paragraph
okay.
of one of my works. Which features the aggressively horny, androgynous, bisexual protagonist of mine, Detective Kyle Creams.
Mm.
Now, this is from one of his most celebrated adventures. Mm. These were all thrillers.
Yes.
It was called They Fucked. It was an erotic thriller that the magazine Sex Monthly called A Who Done It That Turns Into A Who Didn't Do It.
Oh, yes. I get it.
Yes. Sex Monthly was quite nice to me.
Mm-hmm.
I never gave them my real name, but if you're listening now, Throbert Frost is Richard Benjamin. And this is the last paragraph, which I don't mind spoiling. After all, it's not about the beginning or the end. It's about all the fucking in between.
Yeah, that's right.
As I have always
said. Ain't that the truth? Ain't that the truth?
All right. Here's the last paragraph. The pool boy was sweating and glistening in the hot sun. I stole his wallet so I could get a look at his driver's license. Sure thing, he was 18. Well, that's enough to get my stick hard. So I asked all the right questions, heard all the right answers, and the next thing I knew, I was consensually plowing him like an ox's yoke through red Georgia clay. Wish I could say it was lovemaking, but that would be patently false. It was a gritty 15-round battle of attrition with neither fighter wanting to go down, except for when they went down on each other, repeatedly. And in between penetration. As one of the onlookers remarked, my God, they're never going to come. But we did. We both blew the craziest loads. Anyway, then I solved the crime. It was the butler. There was security cam footage of the whole thing. The end.
Wow.
Yes.
Wonderful.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you. That was one of my favorite ones. They fucked.
That is great because you just sneak it in right at the end that here's the solution to the mystery, as it were. The butler did it.
Right. Well, you know, people read erotic fiction for all types of reasons.
Yes.
So this one in particular, you know, well, all of them featuring Detective Kyle Creams, all involved some kind of crime.
Mm-hmm.
And then his crimes would take him through a town or a county or a state or
yes.
maybe even across country lines, trying to solve this crime, but ultimately getting to something a little bit more sexy and sensual.
Yeah, absolutely.
Rarely sensual.
Evidently, yes.
Yes.
It was not lovemaking at all.
No.
Well, I'm going to have to get my hands on a copy of that. If there are any more in print, I hope there are.
They Fucked? I only have scanned copies of They Fucked.
Great. You could fax one right over to me. I'll get you my fax number.
Okay. Scans work over email best. But
Absolutely.
Is that all right?
Yeah, that'll do too.
Wonderful.
That'll do too. If you don't want to fax it, but you have the option to fax.
You want me to print it out and then fax it to you?
You could, but you don't have to.
That would be an extra step or two for me.
I suppose it would. So electronic mail, that's – yes.
That's all right for you?
That'll do, yes.
Okay, great.
Great. Wonderful, wonderful. Now, you must have, through the years, used a variety of different techniques, different processes, different sort of little writing rituals to kind of get yourself in that writing headspace, I imagine.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
What I love to do on my program each week is take my guest through my process, the BUN process, also known as the BUN technique for writers and writing. And this is the process by which I am able to slam out, 100 novels a year in a bad year and even more in a good year. So I'd love to guide you through the BUN process right now and see how you do with it. Do a little demonstration for our listeners. And I think it'll be fun.
This is a privilege. May I take notes?
Oh, please do. Please do. All right. So for the BUN process, first of all, we need you to put away your telephone, put away all your electronic gadgets and your gizmos and your buzzers and your beepers, okay? Put them away. A lot of distractions in the modern age. Now, once we've got them silenced, I need you to go ahead, take a deep breath. Great. You can exhale now. Great. Now, close your eyes. Don't fall asleep. All right. Now, one more tiny deep breath. Great. And now, look into your mind's eye and tell me what you see in your fantasy imagination scape. What do you see in there? Who do you see in there?
You want me to answer?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Yes.
Sorry, I was transfixed. I see a basketball with the stitching of a football on it.
Okay. What else do you see? Who's there? Who's there?
I see four men who are all holding it. Approximately 4 feet off the ground.
Mm-hmm.
They're smiling. They're nodding at each other. Some of them are saying, ah, ah. Others are saying, oh, oh. One of them has a watch.
I see.
He's gesturing with his head to it.
Does the watch has the time on it, I imagine. Does it also show the date?
It does, yes.
It does?
Yes, it does.
What does the watch say?
The watch says about 10 to 11,
uh-huh.
August 27th, Tuesday.
Tuesday, August 27th. And what's the year?
It's not on the watch.
It's not. The watch doesn't say what year it is.
No, but based on their clothes, I'm thinking this is the early 20th century.
Okay.
But yes.
We might want to pin it down even closer than that. Is there a calendar over on the wall?
I'm looking around.
Uh-huh.
Yes, there's a big one.
Oh, there's
a very big one.
Great. And what does the calendar say?
The calendar says 1907.
1907?
Wow. Wow. It is a big calendar.
That's what year it is.
6 feet by 4 feet, I'd say. What an obnoxiously big calendar.
All right. And what are the men doing?
Now they're moving the ball in a circle. They're all still touching it. They're moving it in a circle like it's a piece on a Ouija board. And they're starting to moan a little bit. Oh, 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 oh. One of them starts to say, bubble, bubble, and the other shoots him a look like, not now.
It's some sort of a ritual, it seems like.
Yes. Yes, they're getting ready for a big game. Wait, in the background, now I'm seeing something. It seems to be the goalposts that you'd find on a football stadium, and yet there is netting in the goalposts similar to what you'd find on a basketball hoop. Ah, this is some kind of forgotten sport, a blend of football and basketball.
Some sort of hybrid forgotten sport from days gone by.
Yes. There are women in the stands with their children, appear to be the wives and children of these four players. The four players are now starting to play the game. They're all on the same team. There is no other team. Isn't that interesting?
They're
not playing against anyone.
Oh, that's amazing. Well done.
Thank you.
Bravo. That was fascinating.
That was, I don't know if that was useful, but it was I'm
glad to go through. I think it was very useful.
Glad to go through the Richard Bunn lens and see what came out.
You're four pages into a wonderful new story about a game that might be called basket foot or foot basket.
Foot basket.
Net foot?
Net foot.
Hoop feet?
Yes.
Any of those titles might work. Very interesting.
Wow.
Sort of a look into an alternate past, if you will.
This is odd that your process took me to a genre that I'm familiar with,
yes.
But recontextualize it as a period piece.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I've never gone back and written things that long ago, but maybe this will be called 1907 Netfoot, the sport that never was.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes.
And I'd be intrigued to know how the watch in 1907 displayed the date and the day of the week.
Well, it felt like you were pushing me to say that it happened.
I don't know anything about that.
You were pushing. I said it was just a watch, and then you kept prodding about what the watch looked like.
I may have asked about that, yes.
Yes, you did, yes. Yes. But I'm as confused as you are as well.
Well, I think it's just great that ultimately we did find a calendar on the wall there, so we were able to determine exactly what year it was. That was a turning point for me, I know.
I'm impressed by the bun process.
Well, thank you. Thank you for trying out. Another wonderful demonstration from one of my guests. I'm so sad that we're running out of time right now because we've had such a wonderful discussion. We could go on for hours and hours, I'm sure, but we're almost out of time. But I've got to know, Richard Benjamin, what are you working on next? What are you writing now, and what can we expect from you in the future?
Well, similar to a voracious reader,
mm-hmm.
who likes to keep a stack of books and alternate between them, I like to keep a stack of novels that I'm working on and alternate between those.
Right.
I have many children's novel titles that I'm currently working on,
mm-hmm.
with my publisher and my editor, so I can go through those.
We'd love to hear a little preview. That would be exciting.
And there's also a collection of Sports Illustrated for Kids, which they've very graciously, in an anniversary year, asked me to contribute some of my most memorable articles.
I see. Oh, so that's why you were being so diplomatic earlier, because they're letting you work on the anniversary issue. Because previously you had just anger and venom for those people for years. But now I understand why you were being so nice earlier. But that's great. That's great. Let's hear all about it.
All right. Well, I'll start with that. I'll start mm-hmm. with that. You're right. I spent a good 3.5 to 5.5 years viciously, publicly angry at them, dragging their names through the mud as I felt they did to mine. But they've been gracious enough to ask for a few of these articles. Now, these are some of my tentpole articles, some that were nominated for Children's Pulitzers. Why Collecting Football Cards Makes You an Idiot.
Okay.
That was from August of 1996.
That was a very hardline stance of yours.
Yes. It's no less true, and time has only proven me more and more correct on that.
I see.
Don't collect football cards. It makes you an idiot.
Makes you an idiot.
Yes,
okay.
There's the least amount of money in there, and there's no satisfaction. Plus, injured football players decline rapidly.
I see.
Pogs will give you cancer.
Aha.
And that was when Pogs seemed to be a threat to the physical education of children.
I see. Now, was that just a theory of yours, or was there any actual medical fact to that story?
That one has since been discredited.
I see.
But it's probably my most humorous piece.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And that is from February of 1994.
I see. So just a lot of wild conjecture on your part?
Yes. That one probably won't make the cut.
Uh-huh.
And then my final one, this is from July of 1998. Michael Jordan is 100% man.
Aha. Uh-huh.
That was a profile of one of the greatest athletes of all time, Michael Jordan.
Well, I don't know who could argue with that one.
I don't know either. That one was a runaway hit.
That's great. I imagine they've got to include that one in there.
I hope so. Now, if you'd like for me to talk about the current children's novels that I'm working on.
Yes, what are some of those titles?
The Orphan That Loved Kicking Field Goals.
Oh, okay.
He kicks his field goals into a family's heart.
Oh, I like that. I like the sound of that.
That's an adoption story.
Uh-huh.
What we call in the children's biz, an adoption story.
Uh-huh.
That's good for children.
Yeah.
It helps soften their view of adoption. A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Touchdown.
Oh.
Yes.
I like that as well.
That one is an entire novel about one touchdown drive between a 7th, 8th grade football team.
I see. So that's a full 200 pages describing one sort of 12 or 15-minute event?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So just really getting in a great detail, I would imagine.
A lot of running plays.
I suppose, yes.
A lot of chatter in the huddle. Great running play. Let's run a draw to the left. Good idea, Kyle. What does coach say? Coach says let's try a pass play. I don't feel confident with that. I'm a wide receiver. Let's run it again.
Right. And that you've got probably 50 or 60 characters in there, and you can spend a lot of time getting everybody's thoughts on every single thing that happens, I suppose.
Yes, which I do. I do.
I would hope so.
You said 200 pages. That's actually one of my longer first drafts. It clocks in right now at 480 pages.
Wow.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Approximately 40 pages per minute of action on the field.
Yeah.
Yes, because that's our experience of life.
That's great. That is detailed work.
Framed for Stealing Bases.
Ah, nice. I like that because you do steal bases in baseball.
Yes.
And stealing is a crime, but the word has two different meanings, and you've played off of them right there in the title. I'm very excited about that.
I wish you were my editor. Now, this one's about a foster kid who's very, very fast.
Okay.
But so fast that he can't stay with any of the foster families that he's been with until a baseball coach, who also is runs a foster family, says, I've got something that you can steal, you little kleptomaniac, because he's been in and out of juvenile detention. Then this next one was controversial. My editor doesn't like it. This is actually a manuscript from 1993, right before the World Cup came to the U.S. And I kind of regret this one, but I'm trying to rework it.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Soccer is for Gay People.
Oh, yes. Yeah, well, that would be very controversial, I suppose.
I'm told I should scrap that one.
I think you might want to scrap that one. You've managed to find a title that even I can't get behind, which
really
is a rarity. Because I burn through titles and I do no editing at all, but I can't get behind that one. Soccer is for Gay People? Very inflammatory.
Again, I wish you were my editor. That's great. That's a great note. I'm crossing it out.
Well, Richard, I'm so sorry we're out of time. We could continue on and on and on. Thank you so much for being here.
Richard, it was my great pleasure.
This was great. We have to do this more frequently.
We should.
Thank you so much, listeners, for tuning in once again to the Mr. Right program, right with the W Play on Words. What a great episode here with Richard Benjamin. Have a wonderful week. Bye.
Episodes of Mr. Right were recorded at Earwolf Studios and engineered by Ryan Connor and Sam Kiefer, and recorded at Werewolf Heart Studios and engineered by Alex Burke. Mr. Right is produced by Mark McConville and created by Paul Britton. The theme song, Hot Decaf and a Fancy Scone, was written and performed by Alex Burke, Brandon Dickert, and Gordon Bash, and engineered and produced by Neil Baldock. Mr. Right is a Howl original and a production of Mid-Roll Media.